Hello, this is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 on your radio dial. And for our virtual listeners, our website is kptz.org. That's where you can listen to today's show. You can also sample some of our earlier shows, which are online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who is that guy dancing up the steps at the Haller Fountain? Who are those women carrying multicolor rolled-up yoga mats into the community center? And who is that crazy woman standing in the middle of the street, blissfully taking pictures of birds in the trees? You know, the one that doesn't seem to get to the idea that cars can be on the streets, too. Perhaps she doesn't care, just a blissed-out birder doing her thing. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk to the people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens, lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County, amid the deer, the otters, and even the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today, my guest is a man of many talents and enthusiasms, Aaron Stark, the Director of Food Services and Executive Chef at the Jefferson Hospital. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks.
So tell me, are you a Port Townsend boy? Did you grow up here?
No. In fact, we just celebrated our 11th year here in Port Townsend, January 6th.
I see. So where are you from? Where did you start out?
I started out in Atlanta, Georgia.
Uh-huh. But as a kid, you did something most kids in the U.S. don't get a chance to do. Tell us about that.
Yeah, my mom took my brother and I to England, where we spent a couple of years, and gave me certainly a different perspective on things.
When you showed up at your English school, were you dressed a little bit different than the other kids?
Absolutely, yeah.
Describe it to me.
I think everybody was wearing red sock ties and gray woolen shorts with knee-high socks. And I came wearing, I think I was wearing a Star Wars t-shirt and blue jeans.
I see. Well, did that make it a little difficult for you to fit in, or in fact, did they like it?
I think there were some that were amused by the idea, but certainly I went through a sincere time of being ostracized for a little while.
Bah humbug.
Yeah, right.
And so how old were you when you moved back to the States?
I was 12 when I got back to the United States.
And did you show up wearing the wrong thing again?
Again. Like, why is this guy a little quirky, a little weird? Different perspective. Certainly had a little bit of a different view on the world, for sure.
How so?
You think of going to a different country where everybody speaks, their accent is different. Certainly the culture was different. The food was different. Kind of close to it as part of me because my mom is British. Just really soaking it all in. I mean, some of the food experiences that I had early on kind of gave me direction and certainly my palate.
Tell me about one of your early memorable food experiences.
So when I was about 9, my mother took me to Brittany, France, and I had Coquille Saint-Jacques for the first time. And that blew my mind that something could taste so good. So certainly one of my favorite things to this day to eat.
So. Wow. Well, did you immediately try to start making your own versions, or was that later?
It took me a while before I really started, right before I realized I wanted to cook. It took a while. I think I wanted to be a machinist like my dad, and then realized, boy, there's something better out there, and it was cooking.
So how did you come to the decision, or when? It wasn't when you were 12.
Kind of that time when you're 16 and you're got your car and you're making your way in the world, started your first job. Kind of asking these big questions, what am I going to do? Am I going to go into the service? Am I going to go to college? What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And my father gave me some good words of wisdom. He said, son, get a trade and you can put yourself through college. With that, he kind of always pushed me towards cooking. I think he always thought of himself as a good candidate to be a chef. He grew up in Bermuda, where a lot of his friends were chefs. And he kind of started that romanticism with the lifestyle of being a chef, traveling the world, cooking in exotic places. I kind of started out an apprenticeship under my dad kind of pushing me into it, but certainly found my way in it.
Okay. And did you go to a school and get a degree or a certificate?
I did an apprenticeship through the American Culinary Federation in Atlanta. Again, my father kind of had some connections in the culinary world. He was a teacher at a vo-tech school in Atlanta and taught machine tool and die. And the culinary instructor at the same school kind of helped me get into a pretty unique kitchen. It was 1976. It was the first European-style restaurant in Atlanta, and it was called Petite Auberge. I signed on as an American Culinary Federation apprentice under the chef owner, whose name was Wolfgang Grapp. Boy, he was something. I worked with Wolfgang for 3 years, and he taught me. I was low man on the totem pole, and he got me up a good way up the totem pole.
Okay, and when you say European-style restaurant, what do you characterize that as?
Certainly lots of butter, lots of fat. certainly those older, traditional European-style beef Wellingtons to baked Alaska. We did it all.
Sounds so good.
It was pretty incredible.
So when you finished with Wolfgang, what was next?
So then early 90s, Atlanta was a growing city. A lot of chefs were coming from all over the place to see this budding metropolis in the Deep South. The Olympics were right around the corner, and I had the opportunity to work for a French master chef by the name of Bernard Goupé. I worked with him at Chateau Alon, which is a winery in North Georgia, and in a place called Braselton. I guess Kim Basinger bought the town. But it was a unique place. It was a French-styled winery with a French master chef, and really got to see the idea of true fine dining. The restaurant was Le Clos, and I worked there for about 2 years or so, and it was a seven-course degustation menu, but really the high-caliber cooking. It was fun.
So how did you end up leaving the South?
I moved to Boston. Once you finish your apprenticeship, and in the trade, you go on and...
Why Boston?
Followed my heart up to Boston, to Cambridge. You know, there's a wonderful thing that happens if you work long enough in the trade, you get to know people. It seemed like I moved to Boston within a week. I made a few phone calls and I had a job.
That's amazing.
I started out as a sous chef at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. How long were you there?
Again, I was there probably two and a half years. I started on with Thomas Condren, who's a British chef. Started with him as sous chef, and he left after a year. And then at 27, I got promoted to executive chef.
Wow, it's a lot of responsibility.
It was kind of crazy, working a lot of hours. And then I kind of had this, a little wake-up call saying, you know, maybe I'm not ready for this. I took the step back saying, I need to learn more. And so I worked for a great chef by the name of Jody Adams that owns a restaurant called Rialto in Cambridge at the Charles Hotel, and learned kind of American rustic cuisine, which probably the first restaurant that I really was introduced to organics. Jody's really good about that. But then I worked a six-month stint with Jody Adams through a season and realized, well, I think I've dipped a little too deep. A big part of it was I was living in the city, living in Boston. Mm-hmm. And I think I went to the realization that I'm a country mouse, not so much a city mouse. So I moved out to the Berkshires of Western Mass, up to Lenox, Massachusetts. Took a job as sous chef at a small luxury hotel called Wheatley. It's a 17-room Palazzo mansion that was built in 1892. Grounds were designed by, was it Olmsted that did the grounds at Central Park?
Wow.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful state.
Did you live there too?
I lived in the bedroom community of Lenox, in a place called Lenoxdale, and it was paradise. I had an old farmhouse. Loved the mountains, loved the country.
Why did you decide to leave that one?
Oh, then my heart again. my heart at the time took me back south. My girlfriend at the time graduated from law school. She took a job in Tallahassee, Florida. Found myself in the Deep South again, again, just called up some friends. Do you know anybody down here? And got myself lined up with another master chef by the name of Jack Shoup. Although I didn't work with Jack, he put me on the course of a country club that was revamping their kitchen, and it was Glen Arvin Country Club. So it's kind of ironic. Thomasville, which is 30 miles north of Tallahassee, is a Victorian town. It was the farthest south the railroad ran. And I took the job as executive chef as the third oldest golf club in the nation. And I worked there for about 5 years as the executive chef, and certainly got to see yet again another side of things. Certainly different people live in different ways, super wealthy, a lot of plantations, lots of money.
The upper crust.
Yeah. And essentially, I was the chef of the country club. So I fed people, executives flying in to have a golf round and feed them. And again, using great ingredients. And it was everything a culinarian could ask for, I thought at the time, where you've got a huge budget to spend on food.
Yeah, and it wasn't stretch the food dollar. It was more impact. Right?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Indeed. But I've certainly seen a different light now when it comes to that.
Well, how did you end up leaving the country club? And really, how did you end up out west?
So I think I went through a life change. I was just like, well, there must be something more than this small town. I moved 2.5 months on the road with my dog, Treacle. And we went across country, zigzagged across country. And I found myself in Portland, which to me was a great place to land. The city was alive, pretty close to the ocean, pretty close to the mountains. And Portland isn't like a city as much as it is just a big town. So it had a good feel about it. You know, I'd always looked at wanting to teach culinary arts. I don't know, it did get me out of the rat race of the restaurant business. But I realized I needed a formal degree to teach. So I signed up at the Cordon Bleu School in Portland, and at the same time took a job at a Novo Peruvian restaurant, of all things.
So. Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. This show is called Our Town, and I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today is Aaron Stark, the Director of Food Services and Executive Chef at Jefferson Hospital. Aaron was just telling me that after years in the South, he moved across country, ready for a major change in his life. So you were going to which school was that again?
It was Western Culinary. It's a Cordon Bleu affiliated culinary school in Portland.
And your goal that was to teach?
My goal was to get a degree that would say, hey, you're eligible to teach.
Yeah. And what happened next?
Well, I started working as a sous chef at a Novo Peruvian restaurant, which was, again, never saw this one coming, but what a great cuisine. It's a pure fusion. You know, late 80s, early 90s, culinarians were mashing cuisines together, be it Pan-Asian and Southwestern or Italian and you name it, Indian food, you know, kind of thing. Just it's fun to play with ingredients in that way. The beautiful thing about Peruvian cuisine is that it's a natural fusion. You have indigenous ingredients, which Peru is the cornucopia. It's the tomato, it's the potato, it's quinoa, it's all these wonderful ingredients and the techniques they use. About 200 years ago, the Japanese, Chinese, Italian immigrants.
Everyone moved through there.
Hit Peru in some sort of gold rush, I think. And those techniques using indigenous ingredients and European techniques and Japanese and Chinese techniques influenced the cuisine.
So how did you transition from a Peruvian restaurant to being in Port Townsend?
Well, I met my wife and I was working at the Peruvian restaurant kind of in that trough of you work 12, 14-hour days, 6 days a week. You don't really live a life. And then after a while, you kind of ask the question, what's it all about? And certainly, is it all about working all the time? With that, I decided to step down. And Michaela brought me up here on a weekend. And again, I had lived in a Victorian town before. So something about Port Townsend felt really familiar. But at the same time, it's a small town. And I really love that feel of a small town.
So did you decide to move here without a job?
Yeah. I had made the decision. Well, Michaela brought me up here on a weekend, and we stayed in this sleepy little cabin outside of town and fell in love with the place. I remember going downtown and thinking, wow, it's got all the right pieces. It's beautiful architecture. Look at all this food around here. I shouldn't have any. I've never had a problem finding a job anywhere I've ever moved. And that's the beauty of.
That's great. That's, you know, something that I think a lot of people don't have that luxury to be in a position where it sounds like if you're a chef, jobs are relatively easy to come by.
I would say it's one of those trades, like a carpenter, like a welder, that the jobs are out there in every community, these sorts of things.
But there's a mystique about being a chef as opposed to a welder, for example.
Yeah, I thought of it. You know, the idea that it's the hardest work I've done, and I've done carpentry, and I've done welding, and I've done my fair share of my dad's farming projects when I was growing up. And to me, standing for 12 hours a day, chopping, sweating, stressing out, is a hard job. It's emotionally as well as physically taxing.
I never really thought about it that way.
There's a weird one too, is that when you're around food 12, 14 hours a day, when you're elbow deep in food for that long, it seems like all the things that tell a normal person that they're hungry, smelling and tasting food all day.
Right.
So when it comes down to it, you're like, boy, why is my stomach hurting? Oh, I must be hungry. I should take a break and eat something.
That's really weird, because I would think just the opposite, that you would be munching all day long.
I think there are definitely some friends of mine who definitely take pleasure in that. For me, it was as a passion. So I found the art side of culinary for a while there, and I still do. I think that it's an expression point that is the truest form of art. It invokes all the senses. If you look at a painting, you can just look at it. It invokes your sight, or your sight invokes the spirit of the situation. With a sculpture, you can touch it, you can look at it, if they let you touch it. But cooking is taste, it's smell, it's sight, it's texture, and I'll argue sound too. I mean, I can...
And you can touch it too.
The sizzle, yeah.
Indeed. Well, so how did you end up at the hospital?
Well, we moved to Port Townsend. I didn't have a job. We moved to Port Townsend January 6, 2006. I think it was like 11 o'clock at night, and we rented a little tiny cottage on 31st Street. We moved in the middle of the night, and I remember waking up the next morning and looking for a latte. The first person I met in town was Joe Ruth, that now owns Velocity Coffee, and Joe is a great guy. He's wonderful. He actually married Michaela and I at Al Maristone, and I just kind of saw there's a lot of potential in Port Townsend. At least those fresh eyes saw a lot of potential, saw the architecture and thought, wow, I can do something here. I tried everything in town, and I really have. And I think it's like you try something and maybe it doesn't work out, so you go on to the next thing. And I guess that's a philosophy around life. You try something, if it doesn't work for you, carry on.
But the hospital seems like an unusual fit. And, you know, I have a friend who goes to the hospital to eat lunch just because he likes the food so much.
I'm amazed that I look at it and say, you know, when I was 21, 25, 30, 32, if you would have told me that I was going to be a hospital chef, I would have been like, no, I am not. I would never even think to do that. And it's those things that we deny that ultimately maybe come along and surprise us. What the hospital has done for me is that, you know, across the country, if you ask anybody, what's the worst restaurant in town? Where's the worst place to eat? People tell you, oh, it's, you know, this Mexican restaurant, or it's this burger joint. They just really don't do a good job. But then you say, well, how about the hospital or the school? And they're like, well, they don't even think of it. That's not even on the list, you know, because right. That's so bad. The idea of there's so much room for improvement at hospitals and schools.
Yeah.
Because you're at the bottom of the barrel. You can only work your way up.
Expectations are not high.
Yeah. So the idea of doing that flip of making a high school or a school or a hospital cafeteria, change it from the worst place to maybe the best place. And that's something I look at. It's kind of a fun challenge, but it's really.
How long have you been there now at the hospital?
I've been there since 2011, so okay. I'm going on 6 years now.
Do you have sort of a philosophy for the type of food you're serving there at the hospital?
I think that the ultimate philosophy is that find ingredients that are happening here and use them, support local agriculture. When I was a cook, I was always under the blueprints of a chef. Do this this way, and then we'll be successful, or that's the way you do it. At the hospital, I really look at my staff, Bobby Dean and Chanda and Tom and Kimmy and all my staff at the hospital. And
how large a staff do you have there?
I have 16 on the schedule. Uh-huh. And really give them a little license to be creative. And I think that's what keeps it exciting. I mean, somebody comes up with an idea to do something.
Give an example.
Well, Monday, we're going to do jerk pork, and Chanda and Tommy decided they wanted to do again, utilizing cabbage. So kind of styled Jamaican, but we're going to do a mango slaw with a jerk spiced pork. And it's going to be fun with a nice sweet rice. So vegetable, starch, protein. Mm-hmm. That's the combo for lunch, the entree. We always have two soups, a vegetarian and a savory soup that we make in-house from scratch. We have the salad bar, which is kind of a fun thing to have. And we do alaminute sandwiches for people coming through the line.
And obviously for some of the patients at the hospital, you have to have some specialized diets.
Yeah, we do a seasonal menu, spring, summer, fall, and winter. And again, utilizing product. We do have diet-centric menus for patients. But we also have, we kind of personalized it. We have a concierge position that goes around and acts as kind of a go-between the kitchen, the dietitian, and the patient. More or less like a wait staff that actually goes and spends time with patients and finds out what they want and what they don't want. And we can kind of contort a little bit to mm-hmm. make things fit.
You know, I know you work long hours at the hospital, but what do you do? What are your other passions?
I found the water.
The water.
Yeah, I found the water about 5 years ago. I grew up sailing on a lake north of Atlanta, and I've always been kind of wigged out with currents and lots of wind. But
you got wind here, that's for sure.
It came along, someone inspired me to buy a paddleboard, and I've never looked back. It's just one of those things that I get to go out, and the beautiful thing about it is that it's really changed my body. I mean, I have at a physical, something that I go out and I do weekly, year round, that makes me feel better. My core is so much stronger. It's boy, is it true? I'm living a healthy lifestyle. I can't believe it.
Wow. So tell me about the hockey pucks of oatmeal.
The hockey pucks of oatmeal. So, you know, I've always been amazed by the diversity in Port Townsend. I've met so many characters in this town, and it takes a character. I live large. I live out loud. Here I am. Which is kind of fun. Sometimes I drive my wife nuts with it, but I see all these neat things that happen, and I see like the Wooden Boat Festival, and I see the Kinetic Sculpture Race, and I know people in town that have things to do with it. So when R2K, Race to Alaska, was kind of came about, I was thinking, I want to be part of this because this is a cool thing. And really, I've had that thing with the paddleboard, and I was thinking, well, how can I mix my love of the water and what I do, and how can I benefit this thing that I really see as a cool thing? And so we do the ruckus the night before. Like the past 2 years, we've done the ruckus. We served up burgers. And
the ruckus is the party before the race, just for our listeners who aren't familiar with it.
I've been to sailing parties before, you know, just before the night after a regatta or something like that. Boy, those things are parties. And I see the party going on at the ruckus, and I always remember the next day after a party getting up and going sailing, be it hungover or whatever.
sort of tough.
And so I thought, well, that might be kind of fun to do have some hot breakfast and serve it up to some of these folks that are going on this adventure. And so the first year is kind of on the fly. We made a big thing of organic oatmeal, lots of dried fruit and berries in it, and had it hot, put it in to-go containers, put it on a big styrofoam cooler on the front of the deck of the board, and just started handing out to people starting the race. And I think there's some of the moments where you see, you know, some people are just haggard. I mean, they're like, well, I can't believe I'm up doing this. I got up late.
Green around the edges.
And then just seeing them leave the port there at Point Hudson, just saying, hey, you want some breakfast? And they look at you kind of cockeyed and, yeah, throw them this little container of hot oatmeal. And so last year I actually had help doing it from some of my friends and coworkers at the hospital. So we had fun doing it. So I don't know. It's living out large and having fun. And the hospital's the sponsor of the Race to Alaska. So I thought, what a great way to sponsor us is
oatmeal.
Just nourish people that are about to take off for this great adventure in a weird way.
You know, Aaron, believe it or not, we're basically out of time, but I want to ask you one last question, which What's your vision? What's your dream? What else would you like to do?
I think that, again, I get to feed the full spectrum of town. I get to feed everybody, and it feels good. And I look at the hospital as being a place of wellness, and we got a brand new shiny building, and I have every intention of promoting wellness through the hospital, using that platform. I've got two children, all my friends in town, and how can I be positive with that? I think I'm never going to retire. I know that. And I think ultimately I would love to see a community kitchen, a community sponsored, however that happens, but a big kitchen, kind of in the same ilk as a Grange, as a meeting place, as a big kitchen where people can learn to cook, people can cook in groups, people can store food. I think it's going to become more and more important. And, you know, when I meet young kids today, like seventh graders yesterday at the Illihi, they're all stoked about cooking. They see it on the Food Network. They see it. It's the cool thing is cooking. The irony in most cases that kids are eating TV dinners watching the Food Network.
That's crazy.
Where, I don't know. I'd love to show anybody how to cook. That's what I really love doing, is because someone showed me and it changed me. So I love showing anybody how to cook.
That's great. Well, the engineer is tearing his hair out.
All right. So I'm sure he is. Aaron,
thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Aaron Stark, the Director of Food Services and Executive Chef at Jefferson Hospital. For all you folks out there in Radio Land, stay tuned to KPTZ Port Townsend for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.